tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. For this hour of continuing series, we are rounding the bend on two 13-part shows. Later on, it's episodes 11 and 12 of Frankenstein, but first it's The Deerslayer with Part 11, a syndicated broadcast from 1932.
You are about to hear another episode of The Deerslayer, dramatized and directed by Charles Frederick Lindsley.
Bought the freedom of Hurdy Harry and old Tom Hutter by giving Rivenoak, the Indian chief, four small white ivory elephants. The two former captives are back on Hutter's houseboat with Deerslayer, Chingachgook, Judith, and Hetty. Deerslayer and Chingachgook have both come to the lake with the express purpose of rescuing from the Iroquois Chingachgook's betrothed, Wah-ta-Wah, or Hist. Hist has sent word to her lover by Hetty that she will be waiting at a certain point just as the North Star makes its appearance. As this episode opens, Deerslayer and the Delaware chief are on the lake, heading for the designated point of meeting. They realize that their mission is a hazardous one and are proceeding with great caution.
This is our first warpath, Chingachgook. But I hope we can bring Hist off with us without a fight with the Iroquois.
Big Sarpon want Hist. Also, Mingo scalp.
Well, I can't argue against your redskin, Nader. But I shall not fire my rifle or use my knife except in self-defense.
Night, much dark.
It's so dark, I'm afraid we'll not have that star to help us. Do you think you can tell the time without it? We ought to arrive exactly at the moment.
Time now for star. Tree close.
You take the canoe in the bank. I'll mind my rifle as we be paddling for an ambush.
Look. Star show from cloud. Time come, we find his.
Hold in, then we'll look around. But be on your guard. Let's stop right here a moment, Chief. If Hist has been waiting for us, she'll make herself known.
Hist not come. Big Sarpon go Mingo camp. Steal when Mingo sleep.
Don't forget, she may not be able to slip off here. The Mingos know now you have come to the lake, and they'll try to keep the gal out of sight.
Hist be here. Star shine.
Are you sure that this is the right place?
Sarpon, sure. See star over big pine.
Look, Chief. See that fire? Do you know what that means? The varmints have moved their camp around to this point. I'll wager your sweetheart is under guard this minute.
Sarpon go Iroquois camp.
Wait a minute, Delaware. There's no cunning in that. This is a tricky matter. We have to go with caution. Those voices are on the other side of the pint in that little bay. The thing for us to do is to slip around where we can do a little reconnoitering.
Deerslayer, go. Chingachgook, wait here for Wah-ta-Wah. You go by self.
She'll not come here, Sarpon. You come with me, and I'll show you your gal right in the middle of the Iroquois camp. Find out what's in minds.
Not many warrior in camp.
They're not all here. But there's Rivenoak and about a dozen of the varmints.
What do?
Don't you see? They're admiring those little elephants, the beasts with two tails.
Squaw look happy.
Yes, they're feeling good about something. All except that old hag sitting off there by herself. What's wrong with her?
Listen. What old squaw say?
I can't understand. It was a command of some kind, I think.
Ottawa.
Command yourself, Chief. Command yourself. It is the girl. But don't move. Don't you see? The old hag is his bodyguard. I told you she'd be watched.
Move close. Be pine. Stop and call. Wah, understand.
Don't even chat up like a squirrel. Just watch.
Must act quick. Once Wah go too hot for night, can't escape old squaw.
Uma! Uma!
Rivenoak is calling to the witch. What did he say, serpent?
Tell old squaw, go spring water.
And she's taking her charge along. Where is the spring?
Not know.
Let's hope it's this way. If it is, we have a chance.
Squaw, come this way.
Good, good. Now listen, Chief. The canoe is 20 yards down this bank. Those braves are 50 yards from us. We've got to take a chance. When Hist and her old woman come by, I'll take care of this. You take Hist to the canoe. I'll join you if I can. If not... Shh. Here they come. Now, as soon as I grab her, call Hist and get away.
Big serpent, come!
Stop it, you wretch. You're not dead. You'll have your voice back in a minute.
Servant! Servant!
Here, canoe!
Jump quick, Mingo! Come!
Take my rifle while I shovel. We'll get to the castle in a moment if...
Watch! Mingo, jump!
Off the door, Chief! Quick! I'll fight for a way out! Shut up, you devil! I'm no match for you. I'm your captive. Let up!
Trussed up like a fowl. But you're short one Delaware gal, and I guess you'll never see her again.
Paleface friend, welcome. Much welcome. Iroquois keep fire, him dry, white man glow.
I thank you, Mingo. Thank you for your welcome and your fire.
Paleface name Hawkeye, eh?
One of your braves gave me the name of Hawkeye. I suppose on account of a quick and certain aim. When he was lying with his head in my lap before his spirit started for the happy hunting grounds.
Good name, Hawkeye. He sure him blow. Hawkeye him no woman. Why him live with Delaware Indian?
Providence placed me among the Delawares when I was young.
Iroquois redskin like Delaware. Hawkeye more Iroquois than woman. All Delaware ask.
If you wish to get anything out of me, speak plainer. Because bargains can't be made tongue-tied.
Good. Hawkeye, he no got forked tongue. Paleface, no muskrat?
You mean Tom Hutter, I guess. Yes, I know him. I've been living on his castle in the lake.
Muskrat, him no white, him no red, no beast, no fish. Muskrat, him water snake. Him always look your own scalp.
Yes, I must say that's true. But that's not my method. I take no scalps, and I've fought you only in self-defense. Do you understand that?
Rivenoak understand. Hawkeye stout heart. Him no water snake. Rivenoak have plan.
All right, tell it.
Hawkeye go back muskrat house. Tell old muskrat him escape from Iroquois.
What then?
When muskrat him eye in fog, Hawkeye him open door for Rivenoak.
Oh, I see. I go back to the castle and tell old Tom I have escaped, huh? I put him off his guard. Then you slip off in the middle of the night and I let you in, huh? What then?
Iroquois come take scalp. Hawkeye take all rest.
Well, Rivenoak, this is plain English. And I must say your plan outdevils even Mingo deviltry.
No, Paleface, go.
It'll be easy to go back and tell how I escaped from you. And gain some credit, too, by the exploit.
Good.
I see. When inside the house and eating the muskrat's bread and talking with his pretty daughters, I could put his eyes in such a fog he couldn't see the door.
Good, Hawkeye, good, Huron. Blood not more than half white.
You're mistaken there, Mingo. You're mistaken as much as if you mistook a wolf for a catamount. I'm white in blood, heart, nature, and gifts. What about this plan? When old Hutter's eyes are well befogged, and Hurry Harry, the great pine as you term him, is dreaming of anything but mischief,
All I have to do is to set a torch somewhere in sight for a signal, open the door, and let in the Hurons to knock them all on the head.
Brother Wright, he cannot be white. He worthy to be great chief with Hurons.
Now listen, Mingo, and hear a few honest words from an honest man. I'm a Christian born, and as long as earth lasts, I'll never lend myself to such wickedness. To do such would make me an outcast and vagabond. No upright pale face would do what you wish, and no upright Delaware either. With a Mingo, it may be different. No, I despise your offer. I'll not do it.
Utapaka, Mingo Po! Pale face, him love muskrat?
No.
Love muskrat daughter. Wild rose, sweet for bosom of white brother.
Wild rose? You mean Judith, I guess. Her beauty has traveled the wilderness, I see. Well, she's comely enough, but my love is in the woods and on the trail of the buck.
Why my brother come here to lick, if not him come see Wild Rose? Hawkeye come here cause of little string held by girl?
I did come because of a string held by a girl. But the other end was not fastened to my heart. The string you mean is fast to the heart of a great Delaware, Chingachgook by name, or Great Serpent. He come here led by a string, and I follow.
Oh, string him got two ends?
Yes, and the other end is fast to the heart of a Mohican maiden, who was here close to the fire half an hour ago. You know what I mean. Watawa, the Delaware girl you stole from her people. She is now in the castle with the man who's going to be her husband.
Hello. 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 Kill my squaw. Bring back the scalp, die, and wigwam.
What's your name, warrior? You seem somewhat excited about something.
Me, Kedema. Watawa, mine. You bring back.
Oh, I think I recognize you now. You're the farmer that just jumped on my back and kept me from pushing off with my friend. Your leap is long, Catamount.
Pale-faced steel Catamount squaw. Dog, skunk, toad, spider, yangy.
Pull up that knife, savage. I stole nothing. Your wife, as you call her, will never be the wife of a Mingo. Her mind is in the cabin of a Delaware, and her body has gone to find it. Catamount is active, I know, but your legs can't keep pace with a woman's wishes.
Excited dog. Keep in water. Afraid to stand on hard earth. Peek. Woodchuck! It's
hard! Oh, Hawkeye make great mistake. Steal Caramel Squaw! Refuse to help Rivenoak get Muskrat House!
That last I certainly do. What's your next move, Chief?
Peel face him must stand at stake!
God has put me in your hands, Mingo, and I know you will act your will on me. I'll not boast what I can do under torment, but go ahead. Build up your fire. Look at your life. Make your infernal racket. You'll never take Muskrat Castle with my help.
The Deerslayer, on Tuned To Yesterday, part 11 of 13, part of James Fenimore Cooper's Leatherstocking Tales series that was first heard in 1932, and this is an hour of continuing series on Tuned To Yesterday, where we continue with part 12 of 13 of The Deerslayer.
You are about to hear another episode of The Deerslayer, dramatized and directed by Charles Frederick Lindsley.
Deerslayer is a captive in the Iroquois camp. He is offered his freedom if he will join the Indian band. When he refuses, Rivenoak, the chief, says he must die. The party in the castle has set out in the ark and has been skirting the shore in the darkness, thinking they may get sight of the enemy camp and in some way affect Deerslayer's release. But they have had no luck. The present act opens the following morning aboard the ark, which is floating about a quarter of a mile from the castle. Hutter, Hurry Harry, the two Hutter girls, Chingachgook and his betrothed, Wah-ta-Wah, are all quite depressed as they contemplate the fate of the young woodsman.
I think the Redskins have probably moved back in the woods during the night. We have only 3 rifles, and they'll not be enough against 50 or more of the varmints. We better go back to the castle and wait developments. Maybe they'll leave this place alone now.
Not so, Tom. The Riptos won't leave this shore as long as they know they have 6 scalps almost in their hands.
We must do something, Father. We can't abandon Deerslayer to torture and maybe death.
He shouldn't have been so careless as to let the Mingos get their hands on him.
Shame on you, Harry March. You forget that those same Mingos got their hands on you, Father. You'd still be their captive if Deerslayer hadn't furnished a ransom for you.
Father, I know what to do. Let me go alone to the shore. I will go to the camp and talk to the Indian chief. He will listen to me again. And when I tell him the Bible says you should love
be
your...
Be quiet, Hetty. If you had more reason in your head, you'd know that that is child's talk. No, we will go back to Muskrat Castle and wait for them to smoke us out. Deerslayer will have to fight his own battle now.
I think you're ungrateful. Maybe Hetty's right. Let us see...
What's the matter, Chingachgook? You've been playing with that spyglass for 30 minutes. You see a chipmunk in a tree or a squirrel running...
No good, go, Castle. Huron there.
The devil he is.
Huron there? Let me have the glass. Pretty trap we're about to pull down on our heads.
How could the Indians be at the castle, sister?
Hush.
I see no signs about the place except water and logs and bark.
You've had this glass wrong end foremost, Delaware. How can you see a trail in the water?
No trail. Water make no trail.
Chingachgook, right. Stop boat. No go near. Huron there.
That's right, Gale. Stick to the same tale, Sarpent. I hope you and your gal will agree in telling the same story at her marriage as well as you do now. See anything yet, Tom?
If the Hurons are there, I don't know where they be. The place is locked up just as we left it.
No sea moccasin? Look, sea moccasin.
Give me the glass, Hunter. Why, there is a moccasin floating against one of the piles. It may be a sign that the castle has had visitors in our absence.
I saw that, too. But moccasins are no rarities. I wear them myself, and so does Hetty. It's been caught on a piece of bark on one of the piles.
But it might have caught there accidentally.
How so?
Well, it might have fallen from the platform when we were at home. Or it may have drifted up the lake and accidentally lodged there.
Law know what to do. Law take canoe. Get moccasin. Bring back here. Law know if belong to Iroquois.
A good idea, Tom. Let the gal have a canoe and fetch the thing.
No good, walk, go. Too much danger. Big sopping go.
All right, Delaware, if you're so tender of your squaw. Anyway, it's but a piece of deer skin, not a scarecrow to frighten true hunters. In fact, I'm not afraid to go myself.
Red man go. Better I than paleface. No Huron trick.
Yeah, you're wrong there, Injun. A white man's eyes and ears are better than a redskin's any time. But go ahead, Sarpent. Use your paddle and welcome.
Sarpent, go. Bring moccasin. Wait.
Maybe Indian inside.
Impossible, Red Gal. How could the devils get in without breaking off the lock? Do you think they're spirits or something?
Indian fool tricks. Maybe go through roof.
You're too suspicious. You give them Mingos too much credit.
If they are there, why wouldn't they try to harm Chingachgook?
They wait. Think us go castle. Make all prisoners.
Here comes Chingachgook. He'll soon know what the Delaware has found. But I agree with Hurry. Moccasin don't mean anything.
Anywhere the Delaware has shown he's no coward, it takes courage to paddle into a suspected ambush like that and then return here with his back to the enemy.
Well, Serpent, what news from the muskrats? Did they show their teeth? Up with you and tell us what you discovered.
No light. Too still. So still, sea silence.
That's downright Indian. As if anything could make less noise than nothing. Hoist the sail, Tom. Let's have breakfast under your own roof.
Where's the moccasin?
Here.
Huron moccasin. Huron at castle. How do you know, Wah? Porcupine Creole's own son. Wah, no. Huron moccasin.
Yes, you're right about that, gal. But it doesn't prove the enemy's at the castle now. May have fallen from the foot of one of the scouts that visited the place yesterday when we met them about the exchange of them white elephants. Up with the sail, Harry, and we'll be there in a few minutes.
Judy, do you think Father is right? Do you think the Indians may be in the house?
Oh, I can't say, sister. We've been away all night looking for Deerslayer, and it's possible that some of them have come off on rafts and are now lying in ambush.
But how could they get in? Everything looks just as we left it.
Let's go into the cabin with Chingachgook and Wah. If there is trouble, we'll be safer there.
Tell me, Judy, do you fear anything will happen to Deerslayer?
Naturally, Hetty. The Iroquois have lost one of their warriors at his hand, and they've had the Delaware stolen from them because of his aid, and they'll be very angry and vindictive.
Oh, don't you think I could be of help if I went to their camp? I went before, and they did not harm me.
Oh, they'll not harm you, I know. But what argument could you make that will change their angry hearts? Chingachgook, do you know what we can do to free Deerslayer?
Tonight, Big Sarpent, go. Take Deerslayer when Mingo sleep.
But if they capture you too, who will protect his, your sweetheart? He's no afraid. Deerslayer, his friend too. Delaware more tricky than Mingo. Big Sarpent, find way.
Well, here we are at the castle. We'll soon know if we have visitors.
Ahoy there, hurry. Take in the sail while I tie up. Aye. Here you are, Sarpent. Take this line, and when Hurry and me get off, tie up the ark to the platform and all of you come aboard.
Chingachgook, don't tie up, as Father says. Just throw the rope over the head of that pile and let the ark drift around to the side of the castle. If the enemy is here, we'll be out of the line of their fire, and they'll not be able to get aboard us either.
Come aboard, Tom. There's not a sign of the redskin. The place is locked as tight as we left it. Hoist yourself up.
Looks safe and sounds all right.
Sure. The Delaware brags of being able to see silence. Let him come up here and feel it in the bargain.
Any silence where you are, Hurry, ought to be both seen and felt.
Come on in, Tom. Your tenement is safe and sound and as empty as a hollow walnut. Open those windows and let in some fresh air and tell the others.
It's an ambush, you. Quick, cut the rope and shove off. Take the sweep and pull it out if you can.
Harbin, go help Paleface.
No, you mustn't. You've got to protect us now. Quick, do as I say.
Judy, don't leave him alone. Can't we help in some way?
No, of course not. Our only chance is to shove off and pray that Father and Hurry can fight their way out.
How can they get off?
There's a canoe there. They can get to it.
Oh, but the Indians have rifles.
I know. That's the reason we can't stay by.
Oh, look. They're fighting on the platform now. Oh, Judy, I know Hurry will beat them. He must. He's like a giant.
But there are six of them.
He's throwing them in the water. Look, there's the second one.
The rascals are taking the lake, and I'll soon have them all swimming. Ain't that so, Barbet? Come on, you pagan devils. See if Hurry isn't a match for us.
I told you, Judy, I told you. They can't take him. He's too strong for all of them. There are only two left now. Oh, where's Father?
He's fighting inside, or else they've captured him.
Harry's choking both of them at once. Oh, it's awful, Judy, but the one he threw in the water is climbing up the stockade. He doesn't see him. What is that in his hand?
It's a rope of bark. Oh, it'll all be over now, sister, unless Father can get away. Harry will be tied up helpless as a log.
Why have they all rushed inside the castle?
To join in the fight against Father. Chingachgook, listen. We're only 50 yards away. Force the ark back toward the platform. I have a plan. Quick, just as fast as you can.
What are you going to do?
We'll rescue Harry, if we're quick about it. The Indians will go busy inside. They're paying no attention to us.
But we can't land.
No, wait. Hurry. Hurry, listen. As we drift in close, roll over the edge and fall into the water. I'll throw you a rope, and Chingachgook will pull you off until we can get you aboard.
All right, Judith. We'll have to be fast about it. Ready?
Judy, he'll drown. His hands and feet are tied.
No. You're too much of a fish for that. If he gets the rope in his hands, he can swim underwater until we pull him free of the Iroquois rifle.
He's caught it.
Pull along now, Chingachgook, as fast as you can.
Judy, the Indians have discovered what we've done.
Keep inside the cabin. They'll not touch Harry if we can keep him underwater. Hurry, Chingachgook. They'll have to reload now. Hold up, Sarpent. Give me help with this rope. Pull, hurry up past the end of the scow. We'll be out of danger then, and we can get him on board with us. Harry, keep a lookout on the other side and tell us if the Indians take to the water.
All safe, Judith. You're a smart girl.
Now take the sweeps again, Chingachgook, until Harry gets his breath and get as far away as you can.
But Judy, Father, don't leave Father.
I don't like to tell you, girls, but we can't help him now.
Oh.
The Mingos have taken another scout.
Oh, bad news. But it's more time for grief now. Harry March, there's but one possible chance for our escape.
What's that?
We'll get to ashore tonight. You'll find your way to the garrison on Lake Mohawk. And you'll bring the soldiers as fast as you can get them word.
The Deerslayer, on Tune to Two Yesterday, part 12 of 13, first broadcast in 1932. This is an hour of continuing series on Tune to Two Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for the George Edwards Players, with an adaptation of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. The syndicated episode first heard in 1931. It's part 11 of 13.
We now present George Edwards in Frankenstein. Frankenstein was gradually recovering his health, and he was telling his story to his friend Captain Walton on the ship Voyager, which was icebound somewhere near the North Pole. On one occasion, just after Frankenstein had described the death of his wife, the monster appeared on the ship. He went to the cabin, and there he attacked Captain Walton. Frankenstein advised the captain to carry firearms in future and to let his crew do the same. The next day, Captain Walton again visited Frankenstein's cabin.
Great Captain, what news?
The ship is carefully guarded, Baron Frankenstein. We have seen no sign of the monster.
He swore that he would return here to kill me.
He cannot board this vessel now without being seen. I have placed men on guard all over the vessel.
Oh, that monster is almost a devil. You do not know what he can do.
I must apologize to you because of the abject fear which I showed yesterday.
You need not apologize, Captain. All men show fear when they see the monster. I am his creator, and I am afraid.
Did you say that the monster is impervious to bullets?
I did not say that. He has certainly been wounded twice, but he has recovered. He is so strong.
Well, if we have another visit from him, it shall be his last. I swear that we shall kill him.
I hope so.
Do you feel you are able to tell me what happened after the death of your beloved wife?
Well, the bodyguard Fabian and myself found my wife's body at the foot of the stairs. I picked the body up tenderly and bore it to another room while Fabian went for assistance. I looked at the still form of my wife, then I knelt down and prayed. I pray that I be granted life so that I may destroy the monster which I created. Has not my punishment been enough? Have not others suffered because of my sin? When will my suffering cease? Oh, Elizabeth, my beloved wife, I will live to avenge you and to avenge those who have died because of my evil work.
I kept my promise, Frankenstein.
What? You here?
You cannot move. The creature is stronger than the creator. I hold you fast.
Oh, so great is my hatred that it gives me strength. I shall free myself. I shall kill you.
Hear me, little man. I despise you.
Let me go. Let me go. Let me go.
Hear me. Did you not condemn me to a life without a mate, without a companion? Did you not create me and make me an object of hatred and contempt? Now all men are against you. They know that you created me. They know that you have brought misery to others. Therefore, you will become an object of hatred and contempt. You are now without a wife. I killed her. That is her still body lying on the bed. Suffer now as I have suffered, Frankenstein. Oh, if only I had the strength to kill you. You have not the strength. In your foolishness, you have made your creature stronger than yourself. My work is done now. I am leaving here. I cannot make you suffer more. I know that every man's hand will be against you, and you will be an outcast just as I am.
Where are you going?
Who knows? I shall wander the world. Mayhap I will find someone as hideous as myself. Someone who will be a companion to me.
Wherever you go, I shall follow you. If it be to the ends of the earth, I will not be content to rest until I have destroyed you.
Have a care that I do not destroy you. I could do it now. Feel you, my fingers about your throat.
All right. Why do you not kill me? It would be a merciful release. But I should not die happily, knowing that you still live.
You shall live on. You shall suffer as I have suffered. Mayhap we shall meet again.
We shall meet again, I swear it. But tell me, have you the powers of evil? How is it that you were able to find us? How is it that you were able to get into the house?
I laughed as I watched you searching for me. You did not think that I could find shelter on the roof, that I could lower myself into the window of this room. Your wife slept. But she heard me as I came through the window. She started up and seized her pistol. She fired, but her aim was wild. She did not struggle much, Frankenstein. Then I took her body and hurled it down the stairs.
You have been on the roof all the time?
I have.
Oh, Frankenstein, I have sent for the book.
Why? The monster! Shoot him!
You shall not kill me!
Oh, he's not my homicide! Make him let me go, Bell! He's choking me!
Oh, let that man go! Do not kill him!
He shall die! All my enemies shall die! Do not approach Frankenstein! With one hand I can slay this man! With the other I hold you at bay!
Oh, do not kill that man!
He shall die!
Look
at me! It gives me pleasure to make men die! One man gave me life, but I have given death to many! Help! Help! The man struggles for a weaker Frankenstein. You cannot aid him now. I hurl him aside. And thus another of my enemies has died. I hurl you aside. And I say farewell. Seek not to find me. My work here is done.
Oh, come back. I must have further speech with you. I must find some way to make peace with you.
You will have peace if you do not strive to follow me.
What happened, Baron Frankenstein? Did the monster make his escape?
He climbed through the window and with surprising agility scrambled onto the roof. I could not go after him, but I called for help. When I turned, I saw the body of my wife lying on the bed and the body of the man, Fabian, lying on the floor. Oh, words cannot express my utter horror and remorse. I think I wept and hurled myself on the floor in a frenzy of agony. Presently, the door opened and the burgomaster entered. As soon as he saw me, he said,
Baron Frankenstein, what has happened?
Oh, if you have a pistol, dare shoot me. Put an end to my life. I cannot live on.
What has happened to Fabian?
He is dead. Murdered by the monster. My wife is also dead.
Murdered by the monster, which you say you created.
I did create him. And may God forgive me for that sin. It seems that my suffering is never to end. I am guilty of the murder of these innocent people.
For months we have been striving to find that monster and to destroy him. If you are his creator, as you say, then it is your responsibility to find him and destroy him, Baron Frankenstein.
I know it.
I have communicated with the authorities, and there is talk of ordering your arrest. If you created a devil, You should be punished.
Oh, have I not been punished enough?
The people of the village murmur against you. They say that you should be hanged for these murders.
Oh, I feel that I am going mad. I know that I turned this murderer loose upon society, that while he lives, there may be other murders. Therefore, I swear a sacred oath that while there is breath in my body, while I live, I shall devote my life to tracking him down.
We feel that if you remain here, the monster will remain, that other lives will be in danger.
So all men are against me. I am to suffer as my creature has suffered. I am to know what it is to be a fugitive, an object of hatred and scorn. It seems that his revenge is indeed complete.
I advise you, for your own sake, to leave here today.
I will leave very soon. Spare me a few minutes so that I may pray beside the body of my beloved wife. Then will my journey commence. Where it will take me, I know not. But if it be to the end of the earth, I will find him and destroy him. Oh, would that I destroyed him before I gave him life.
So be it, Baron Frankenstein. I will see that you are not molested before you leave the village.
Oh, await me downstairs. I will join you in a few minutes.
So, Baron Frankenstein, you were forced to leave your native village.
Yes. When I left my home, my first act was to try and find some clue by which I might trace the steps of my fiendish enemy. I wandered to the cemetery, and I prayed a while by the grave of the child William. Then I heard a sound behind me. I looked up, and it was the monster watching me. He did not speak, but fled away, and I pursued him, only to lose him. But he left a trail of death and disaster wherever he went, and for many months the ceaseless pursuit went on. Sometimes I would almost come up with him. Once, when I was traveling by night, the broad disk of the moon arose, and it shone upon a huge, ghastly, distorted shape which fled before me with more than mortal speed. I went to the coast, and by a strange chance, I saw the fiend hide himself in a vessel bound for the Black Sea. I booked my passage in the same ship, but he escaped, I know not how. I traveled to the wilds of Tartary and Russia, and once I came upon a peasant's home in the wilds of Tartary. I saw the peasant standing outside his cottage. He was wringing his hands in terror, and said, I have seen the devil himself, a strange, horrid fiend.
Tell me, my friend, what have you seen?
The devil himself, I tell you, sir. A huge, shambling creature with a countenance more hideous than I have ever seen. He forced his way into my cottage, took all my food, ate it himself, and placed his cold, clammy hands upon my throat. I screamed in mortal agony. Then he withdrew his hands and laughed, the most ghastly laugh that I have ever heard.
Tell me, where did this creature go?
I know not. He went out of my cottage, and I was afraid to follow him.
Here, take the silver to compensate you for anything which the monster stole from you. I must be close to him. I feel my search will soon end.
Oh, that laugh again. He will kill us. Do not let him kill me.
My quarry is near me. Stand aside, man. This time he shall die.
What happened, Baron Frankenstein? Did you shoot the monster?
Ask me no more now. I am tired. Later on, I will tell you what happened on that fateful day.
Frankenstein, untuned to yesterday, part 11 of 13, first broadcast in 1931. During radio's golden era and a bit beyond, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein was adapted on several different radio programs, the series we've been listening to among the earliest. Others include the Witch's Tale series, which rolled out a half-hour version in August of 1931. CBS's Suspense series gave it two plays in the 1950s, and it was dramatized on NBC's popular Favorite Story program in February of 1947. The Favorite Story show was one that invited celebrities to pick one of their favorite tales to be adapted on the air. For Frankenstein, it happened to be comedian Fred Allen's favorite story. This is an hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for part 12 of 13 of Frankenstein, broadcast in 1931.
Now present George Edwards in Frankenstein. Baron Frankenstein described his amazing adventures to Captain Walton of the ship Voyager. The Voyager had been icebound for many months, but the thaw was setting in, and the vessel was commencing to drift southward. Captain Walton brought this good news to the Baron.
Frankenstein, our journey homeward is commencing. The ice is breaking up. There are several patches of water around the vessel. Very soon, we will be underway.
I must leave the vessel at once. I know the monster is still alive.
I cannot let you leave, Baron Frankenstein. You know that.
You have no power to keep me here.
Well, we are not making very much progress as yet, and I would sincerely like to hear the remainder of your story. I am writing it all in my journal.
Well, I was telling you that in the wilds of Tartary, I encountered a peasant who was terrified because he had seen the monster.
And when you were seeking to comfort the peasant, you heard the monster's laugh.
Yeah, I drew my pistol and moved towards the door. To my surprise, the door opened and the monster appeared. My surprise was so great that I hesitated for a moment, and that hesitation was fatal. With incredible swiftness, the monster advanced and wrenched the pistol from my hand, and then...
It is time that you and I spoke again, Frankenstein.
You seem to have the powers of evil. Always you flee before me. Am I never to kill you?
Shall I kill this peasant, or will I bid him begone? I do not wish him to hear what we have to say.
Go, fellow. Do not return here for some hours.
Because you are my creator, so should you be my friend. We are both outcasts now. Can we not also be friends? I have thoughts just as other men. If I had a friend to whom I could speak, and who could read to me and teach me many of the ways of the world, perhaps I would find some strange happiness. You cannot return to your world, Frankenstein, but you could find loyal, faithful, and honest friendship with me.
You have murdered my wife, my friends, and made me an outcast in this world. And yet you dare to ask for friendship.
Is your life happy now?
I have never known a moment's happiness since I created you.
And I have never known a moment's happiness since I was created. Do you not owe it to me to give me some peace and happiness? To give me friendship? To give me your ideas?
I owe you nothing but hatred.
Was it my fault that men shrink from me and strive to kill me? Is it my fault that I defended myself by killing them and thus earning further hatred? Did you not refuse to make for me a companion?
I could not bring myself to do it.
And because of that, my rage knew no bounds and I slew all whom you held dear. Now it is over. We are both outcasts, objects of hatred, scorn, and loathing. Let there be friendship between us, Frankenstein.
I have sworn that I will never rest until I destroy that which I created. Mayhap I am to blame for many of the sufferings which you have endured, but the sin was mine. I created you. Now it is my solemn and holy duty to destroy you.
And it is in my power to destroy my creator.
You may destroy me.
I will. But not until you have experienced further suffering. You must pursue me. You must live the same lonely life as I live. And perhaps I will receive a strange pleasure knowing that I have made my creator suffer.
And perhaps I am receiving a strange pleasure, knowing that you are paying for your sins, knowing that all men are still against you, and will always be against you. But I admit the crime was mine in giving life to you, and my only purpose in living now is to end that life.
Mayhap you will never end it. Farewell once again, my master. I offered you my friendship. I offered to live at peace with you, and you refused. Why should a man hate that which he has created? That is one of the things I will never understand. Farewell, Frankenstein. Until the next time.
Did you pursue the monster that day, Baron Frankenstein?
Well, he made his escape with incredible swiftness. And I set off after him. The search went on for many months, and the monster seemed to take pleasure in leading me on. Sometimes, indeed, He left marks in writing on the barks of trees or cut in stone that guided me and instigated my fury. I pursued my journey to the northward. The snows thickened and the cold increased in a degree almost too severe to support. On and on we tramped, and occasionally I was rewarded by a glimpse of my deadly enemy. I realized that I was being led towards the frozen wastes of the north, and I procured sledge and dogs, traveling across the icy wastes and occasionally finding clues of the inhuman devil which I had created. Then I lost him, and for a while I despaired of my own life. My dogs died. I wandered through the snow and the blizzard, gradually finding my way to this ship, where you gave me your kindness and hospitality, Captain Walden.
A strange and dreadfully tragic story, Baron Frankenstein.
The story is not over yet. You know now why I cannot return to England with you. There is no place for me in the haunts of men. I must kill the monster, and then I will be content to die.
Who is there?
Mr. Boyd, sir. The nest is beginning to drift. The ice is breaking more rapidly now, Captain. I think you'd better come up on deck.
Very well, I shall come up now.
I must leave the vessel. Make arrangements for me to be put ashore, Captain.
You cannot leave the vessel, Baron Frankenstein. That would be madness.
I must. You realize that I cannot let that monster roam about killing people at will?
You must excuse me for a moment. You will be safe here in your cabin. You are not yet strong enough to leave your bunk. I will return and discuss the matter with you later. Come, Mr. Boyd. Cannot carry any more sail at present. The vessel is moving slowly but steadily. Better be kept upon this course, Mr. Boyd.
Aye, aye, sir.
Have any of the men seen signs of the monster?
We have seen nothing for the past few days.
I am glad. We are gradually gathering speed and making our way through the ice. By tomorrow, we should be well on the journey homewards. Then I do not think we will have any more to fear from the monster.
But what of Baron Frankenstein? Are we taking him with us?
Of course. You do not think we could leave him here?
The men are afraid of him, sir. They say that he is responsible for bringing that evil monster aboard. They say all their lives are in danger. I beg of you, put Baron Frankenstein ashore. He will be an evil influence during the voyage.
I am the commander of this vessel, Mr. Boyd. Baron Frankenstein is my friend.
The men have been inactive all the while the ship has been icebound. They are ready for any mischief. They've been grumbling lately.
Well, we have started our homeward journey now.
They fear that Baron Frankenstein. They fear this monster. They say that the Baron must be put ashore.
And I refuse. You do not know Baron Frankenstein's story as I know it. That man has suffered. Admittedly, it was through his own sin. But he could not have realized what misery he was to bring into the world and into his own life. He has suffered enough, and I say that he is to stay aboard this ship until we reach England. If anyone attempts to harm him, they will answer to me.
But what if that monster comes aboard? What if it means loss of life?
All the officers are armed. If the monster comes aboard, we will shoot.
It would be easy for the monster to come aboard. There is ice all around the ship.
There is water on one side of the ship. We can watch the icebound side.
And what if the crew mutiny?
If the crew mutiny, they will be dealt with. Gather them here, and I will address them.
All hands on deck!
Let the officers stand with me, Mr. Boyd. So far, this voyage has been a success, and will not be marred by any signs of mutiny on the part of the crew.
I was only trying to do my duty in telling you what the men felt, sir.
I am aware of that, and I am going to deal with the men. I assume I have the loyalty of the officers.
We will obey you, sir, but we are afraid of this monster. If you will remember, he once attacked me.
I do remember that.
All hands on deck now, sir.
Men, it has been reported to me that some of you are showing signs of discontent. For the greater part of this voyage, you have all given me your loyalty, and you have assisted me to make the journey a success. I ask you now not to mar that voyage by any murmurs of mutiny. I am told that some of you are afraid of my friend and guest, Baron Frankenstein. There is no need for you to fear him. He is a gentleman who has suffered. I know his story, and I feel deeply for him. As regards the strange monster which has sometimes come aboard this vessel, I can assure you that all the officers are armed. And if he comes aboard, they will shoot. Attempt to mutiny and disobey my orders, then you will meet with the punishment that is given to mutineers. Now trust in me, men. I will take you back home safely. And remember, if any harm comes to my guest, Baron Frankenstein, the man who harms him shall die. That is all. You may go.
Prepare
Wait!
Baron Frankenstein, how did you get up here?
I forced myself to leave my bed. I heard what you said, Captain. But your men need have no fear. I will go ashore now.
Frankenstein, on Tuned to Yesterday, the George Edwards Players production from 1931, bringing the curtain down on this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVelnier. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you.